Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and this time we're covering Justice League Unlimited Season 2, Episode 8, Hunter's Moon. This episode is a sequel to the Justice League Season 2 and Series 3-part finale, Starcrossed. It spotlights a certain prairie troubadour, so who better to join us on this episode than the host of Prairie Justice, the Greg Sanders Vigilante Podcast, but our friend Ranger Gord Tolton. Hey, Gord.
Well, howdy. You know, it's strange. It's only you Yanks that think that I say it like that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, we're the guys with the southern accents, right? So, I mean, you know, it's okay. It's okay for us to say it like that, I guess. That's Shag. I blame Shag. He started that thing, you know. So,
true.
We blame Shag for everything, though. So, So, Gord, I know you've covered this on your show, but what is it about the Vigilante that makes him one of your favorite comic characters?
Well, it goes back to Justice League of America, number 100, 1972. I opened that thing one day, and it was just amazing the heroes I met that day. Vigilante, of course, has had the most influence, but I met the entire body of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. I met Sandman, Johnny Thunder, even Elongated Man, and Zatanna. Legs, yes, legs. It was just incredible, you know, that I thought the Justice League was just Superman, Batman, and a few other Long Johns. But I was amazed to find out this whole other world, and that it had taken place 30 years before I was born. And I think that's what got me, that there's this whole other golden age of primal comic books. And I've just been a sucker for the golden age ever since. I go back to there, and, you know, with all of its flaws and some of its anachronisms and the occasional racism, I still think that it's just comics at its rawest. And Vigilante, of course, appeals to me because that's the guy next door. He was almost me, you know.
Yeah.
Being where I am here in southern Alberta, cowboy country, and right next to Montana, of course, Vig himself is from Wyoming. You know, I could practically go see him at some point in time. And I just thought it was amazing that a character like that, that looked like that, could be sharing a world, you know, with the likes of Superman, Batman, and all of the rest of the Justice League.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, and, you know, there's something about him. I mean, I think that's because the visual does stand out. And I met him very early in life when I was like only 2 years old. It was one of those Bill Kunkel, Gray Morrow tales in World's Finest. And I think it was number 247, which was from October, November 1977. I think that was my introduction. So it was a great way to meet the character, you know. And, you know, I kind of thought, well, this character is, you know, I knew who the Lone Ranger was already. And so I kind of like, oh, this is kind of like the Lone Ranger being with Superman and Batman in the same book in some ways. You know, I mean, I know they're obviously different characters, but for my very young mind, it just, you know, I'm a big Lone Ranger fan, so I've always been a fan of the character. Not as big a fan as you are, but I've always been a fan of the character. So, gotta ask the question here, just in general, before we get into this episode, what do you think of the Justice League Unlimited take on the character overall?
Oh, I think it's absolutely wonderful. Because mostly you think of Justice or Vigilante in DC Comics in general these days, especially since Crisis, and they seem to use Vigilante and a lot of other characters as wallpaper.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you need to see a great big character blow up page, you know, he's that one guy that'll show up, that'll be there going, "Hi, I'm ready for bear, ma'am." And then you don't see him again. Like they just haven't taken him seriously, other than Prairie Justice, the miniseries back in the 90s. And I believe that's probably a bit of I guess you would call that branding. You know, they have to turn around and throw an image out of him under a DC label in order to keep the copyright.
Yeah.
If they're not going to use him, and they do that with a lot of their characters. But for them to take Vigilante, who is essentially a Golden Age throwback, and put him in with that modern Justice League Unlimited and this special universe where they have just said everything goes, everybody's here. And I think that's just amazing. And I think this episode really shows that well. He probably doesn't belong in this episode. You could probably throw anybody in there. But the fact that they did, they got to write the show towards him, as well as his interactions with Vixen and with Shiera.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. What did you, I was going to ask Cindy, what was your, had you ever met him before the Justice League Unlimited, or just do you?
The only, my only exposure to it was you did the Vigilante Mego action figure, and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Okay, yeah.
And then on Justice League, but I have never read a comic with him in it, and then, like I said, you made the Mego action figure, you showed me what it looked like, I'm like, oh yeah, that really looks like it, but this is my exposure to him.
Oh, okay. Okay. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good, I mean, it's a good place to be exposed to him, yeah. Obviously, you know. So.
I have one complaint about the way he's portrayed on here.
Okay.
As you know this, I can't stand the white hat and pants.
Oh, yeah.
I like him with a tan or a brown hat and blue jeans that maybe are faded. And I think that's where the white ends up coming from.
Yeah.
At least Golden Age coloring, but yeah, white pants. He's a ranch hand. Good Lord, you can't wear white pants.
Especially not after Labor Day.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that's why on my Mego figure, I gave him blue jeans, like faded. They were Duke Boy, Bo Duke blue jeans, but basically it's because what I had, but it matched the Who's Who entry. Gray Morrow, whoever colored it, gave him really worn blue jeans, not white pants. So, you know, he did have a white hat. He does have a white hat, but, you know, so.
You show up to a campfire with those pants, they're going to say, where have you been? Fantasy Island?
Mm-hmm. It's almost as bad as, you know, the old Pace Picante salsa commercials. It's like, where'd you get that salsa from? New York City. You know, that's, you showed up in white pants. What? You know, get a rope.
Toronto.
Yeah, there you go.
But it does fit him, you know, when you're doing a cartoon like this, you know, and you've got primary colors to deal with, it's hardly noticeable.
Right.
And I do have the action figure because I had to. And he's good looking, other than I don't know why I didn't lose the pistol how many times.
Oh, yeah. The carpet monster eats the accessories. Yeah, I like that they gave him the lasso, too, to put over his shoulder. That's a nice touch. Yeah, yeah. It's a really sharp-looking figure, yeah.
My favorite takes on the Vigilante is, go back to that World's Finest that you were talking about with Gray Morrow, where they show up, where he illustrates the hidden weapons that you never see him have.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's got the Derringer up the sleeve, and he's got the Bowie knife inside his boot, and the double-barrel shotgun in beside his guitar case, and things like that. And I went, you know what? Vigilante's a little more Punisher than you think he is.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's the issue I had that showed him getting ready with all that stuff. So I have it. I got it later or something. Because as soon as you said that visual popped in my head. So yeah, that's some great. Yeah, I love it. I love that. And, you know, oh, that's so beautiful. Gray Morrow, just awesome. He's also very lucky to have a pretty big actor doing the voice of him. So what do you think about Nathan Fillion's portrayal of the Vigilante?
Well, he's perfect. He is from Alberta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion's born and raised in Edmonton, and did his early early acting work at the University of Alberta, and then moved on. And it's strange. I have never actually to this day ever seen an episode of Firefly, but I do remember Castle.
Okay.
My wife's a huge detective and cop show fan. Every time I'd come in here and Castle's on, and she just sit here cringing because you know what I'm going to say. Hey, there's Vigilante, and she just goes, "There it is."
Well, full disclosure, and I know we're going to get a lot of, what the crap's wrong with you people? Cindy and I have had Firefly on our list of shows to watch.
I bought you this DVD set.
I know, and we still haven't watched this.
Like 10 years ago.
We're just as bad. We haven't seen the series. We didn't watch Serenity, the movie. I'm sorry, guys. So I apologize. I know it's just...
Now, folks, I bought it for him.
She bought it for me. We just never got around to watching it. So we're in the same boat. So yeah, the Nathan Fillion fan club's going to have a field day with the three of us never watching Firefly. So... Sorry.
Cindy, next time I see it, I'm going through the streaming, I will watch it in your honor.
See, there you go. There you go.
Well, he's actually reunited with another cast member of Firefly. I do know that. But so let's jump into the details on this episode. Hunter's Moon originally aired June 18, 2005. The story was by Stan Berkowitz, teleplay by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, who actually... is one of the co-directors of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
So he has done very well for himself since leaving Justice League Unlimited, which is a wonderful movie, by the way. Music by Michael McQuestion and Christopher Carter, so they both worked on this together. In the cast, we had Maria Canales as Shiera, Phil LaMarr as Green Lantern, Carl Lumley as John Jones, Gina Torres as Vixen, Nathan Fillion as the Vigilante, Elizabeth Pina as Perrin Dole, Hector Elizondo as Krager, and David Barrera as Hawk Number 2.
On the Watchtower, Jean receives a distress call from a mining ship that has found a large deposit of Nth metal, which is affecting their ship. Since Nth metal is the material her mace is made from, Jean selects Shiera to lead the mission. Green Lantern volunteers, but Jean instead selects Vixen. GL is none too happy his current and ex-girlfriends will be spending time together. They are joined by the Vigilante, who is still learning a thing or two about flying a spaceship.
When they arrive on the planet, they find the mine is a hologram and the whole mission was a trap. It's a trap! They are attacked by a group of Thanagarians, including Perrin Dole and Krager, two of the leaders of the Thanagarian invasion of Earth. They seek revenge against Shiera, who betrayed her homeworld by signing with Earth. When the Justice League destroyed their space bridge, which would have obliterated the Earth, the Gordanians used their advantage to enslave Thanagar. The arriving battalion from Earth attacked, with their leader, Ro Talik, going on a suicide run to destroy the Gordanian mothership, but it was too late. The war had already been lost.
Shiera considers turning herself in to save her teammates, but Vixen and Vigilante refuse to go along with it, despite their own misgivings about Shiera's character and her initial betrayal of the League and Earth. Both heroes fought against the Thanagarian invasion, but Vigilante was captured and humiliated by the Filthy Hawks. When Vixen is captured by Krager, it seems she is going to turn Shiera in, but she was just looking for an excuse to get to the ship and call Jean for help. Unfortunately, Perrin stops her mid-transmission.
An injured Vigilante is unable to stop Shiera from flying off to give herself up, but he does manage to capture a Hawkman and make him take him to his ship. Shiera surrenders, but Krager drops Vixen mid-air. Vigilante arrives in the Thanagarian ship and saves her, and Shiera breaks free and begins fighting back. Krager and Perrin are defeated, and the Leaguers leave aboard the stolen ship.
Back on the Watchtower, Green Lantern is happy to see both ladies have survived, but they both blow right past him. Later in the commissary, they swap funny stories about him. Shiera admits she still has feelings for him, as he does for her. Vixen says she always sees things through to the end, to which Shiera responds, "En garde."
Now, if this episode sounds familiar, but the title doesn't, don't feel like you're a victim of the Mandela effect. This episode was originally titled Mystery in Space, based on the old DC science fiction anthology, but was changed shortly before its original airing. There are some press materials that made it out with that title, so some places list this episode as Mystery in Space, and in fact, I think Netflix did at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So... the name was apparently changed so diehard fans like us wouldn't be disappointed by the episode not featuring the star of that long-running DC sci-fi title, which was Adam Strange.
Right.
Which, I mean, I wish we got Adam Strange, too. I don't want to replace the Vigilante, but I wish at some point in Justice League Unlimited, Adam Strange had shown up. So.
Yeah.
So.
Adam Strange is a Canadian. You know, they should get Nathan Fillion again.
Yeah, that's right. They made him a Canadian now, right? In the post, the new 52, the new rebirth era. So, yeah, that's right. Nathan Fillion would be a cool Adam Strange. You know, James Gunn, you're always looking for something for Nathan Fillion to do. There you go. Or have him be the Vigilante, you know.
Guardians.
That's right. He was in Guardians, yeah. Yeah. It was supposed to be Simon Williams, and they kind of cut that out in Guardians 2, which is unfortunate. But so the episode starts, we got Green Lantern walking down the hallway. We see him pass Blue Devil and Crimson Fox, who are talking. So that should make Shag happy, because there's some of his favorite characters there together. Green Lantern is looking over his pad, and a hand grabs him and pulls him into this room. But this is no villain. It's Vixen, and after more than a month apart, she wants a date with her man, and she's not taking no for an answer. And he warns her not to startle him. He says, "Do you know what I could do with this ring?" And she says, "Promises, promises." Mm-hmm. That's a little loaded.
All of this episode is a lot loaded.
Without a ring and a date.
Yeah. So she plays all coy with him, telling him she wants Chinese and not at the place by his apartment, but this place she knows in Beijing. And then she lays across some equipment that's in this room, and let's just say she uses her feminine wiles to convince him. Mm-hmm. With this very low-cut top she has.
Yes.
And it's very provocative. Again, we say this every episode. For a kid's cartoon. I know it's not really a kid's cartoon, but again, it's selling action figures in aisles at Toys R Us, Walmart, and Target. And it's, yeah, the animators were enjoying themselves.
Yes.
Takes the power of will.
That's right. Yeah, it's a good thing he's a Green Lantern, right? Yeah. when he doesn't kiss her, she plants one on him. And then the door opens and he chastises her for being unprofessional. So, do you guys think Green Lantern is being a bit too stick in the mud, even for him? Or you think, what do you think? Was he right that she shouldn't be doing the PDA? What do you think, Cindy?
Well, you have to think. He is, again, from a military background, he is one of the founding members, which they mention later.
Yeah.
And so he probably feels like he has to set the bar, set the example for how to behave. However, I think he's also like right at his line that he's like, man, I've got to keep it professional here because I don't, everything in play with him and his ex and da da da. So
yeah, that's true too. So what do you think, Gord?
Well, I think he's just being very steadfast, like Cindy says. I got to set an example here for the others. Otherwise, chaos could reign in the satellite here.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want Booster Gold and, you don't want to set a bad example with guys like Booster Gold around, you know?
Yeah. Give them an inch, they take 8 miles.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
And you got to remember, you got Green Arrow and Black Canary kicking around too.
So. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So then we find out that Jean is getting a staticky distress signal from a mining ship, and they tell him they have taken in an ore that has disabled their ship, and the vein they took in from it has become unstable. When they send the data, Jean calls Shiera over, and she recognizes that it's unrefined nth metal, which is called transuranic iron ore. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. But, okay.
They're in the periodic table.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
G-O-F-E.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I'm surprised there isn't transuranic pharaoh lad in the Legion, you know?
Yeah.
But Shiera wants to go alone, but Jean tells her she hasn't been pulling her weight as a team leader, which I think it's funny because it's like, you know, she just kind of rejoined the Justice League mm-hmm. recently, but she's still considered a leader, right. A team leader. You know, it's like, oh, okay, so she bypasses all these other people and mm-hmm. it's still got her spot. But she's put out, but then Green Lantern volunteers. Jean says no because they're both founders and he doesn't want any confusion on who's leading the team. And I feel like this really hasn't come up before because we've seen plenty of stories with the pairing of the founders.
Right.
Superman and Batman were taking on the cadre together last episode.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of, this is like a new rule that's been dropped on us.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I don't think John need worry because Vigilante's going to have plenty of confusion about her leadership.
Yes.
That's right. He sure does. But then Vixen volunteers. John is okay with this, but GL says, "You've got to be kidding me. Worst nightmare much?"
Yeah.
He is pretty honked off. He asks Jean why he did that, sending his girlfriend and his ex on the same mission, and I love his very cold response. Difficult for it may be for you to believe, I don't take your love light into consideration when I make command decisions.
Ooh.
This is very similar to the same thing the Guardians told him.
Yeah.
When he was trying to swap out with Kyle Rayner in space. They're like, yeah, no, just because you got girl trouble don't mean...
Yeah, you get to leave.
Or you get to leave. So, but do you guys think Jean could have been more thoughtful?
Well, I mean, it, honestly, Vixen comes walking up. He's got the whole slate. And, you know, obviously there are all kinds of other people walking around the station. Why didn't he just pull another one off? You know?
What do you think, Gord?
Well, maybe it's the other way. John's just trying to clear the entire deck so John can... Or John and John.
Yeah.
So John's clearing the deck so that Stewart can... I don't know. Do his thing a little bit better without having to be so conflicted between Shiera and Vixen.
Oh, yeah, might be. Yeah. Good point. We then see the miner. The miner unmasks, and it's none other than Perrin Dol, the Thanagarian lieutenant from Starcrossed. I like the fact that she keeps her helmet on underneath the miner helmet.
Right. Yeah.
That's nice. But who saw that coming the first time they watched this episode? I mean, I didn't expect to see the Thanagarians again. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, I was like, oh.
That's a nice, you know, it's like, ooh, that's pretty cool.
That's a whole thing, you know. When you start to see Thanagarians other than Katar or Shiera Hall, you just kind of think of it a little bit like those Green Lanterns on the wall. You know, you think of it as, you know, generic throw-offs, you know, with a little bit of variations on the Thanagarian theme, and you never think you're ever going to see them again.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And apparently the reason they brought this whole episode, they did it because they really liked Elizabeth Pina's performance as Perrin Dol. So they kind of wrote an episode basically to get her back.
Right.
So that's, she was a standout for him. So after the intro, we get a great shot of the Javelin in essentially warp. And Shiera is complaining about how Vigilante has his hyperdrive vector set. And I love he responds, nobody likes a backseat driver, ma'am.
But the thing is she knows what she's doing, and he needs to suck it up and take direction. Just because he's the dude doesn't mean he knows all just because he's got, you know, danglers. Sorry.
They're already certifiable.
Yeah, that's right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she tells him if he has a problem, they can take it to the gym when she gets back.
And then she'll kick his ass there, too.
Yeah.
No problem, ma'am. Resetting vectors.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. So he's like, I might better not tick her off because she will kick my ass.
Yeah, but when he tells her maybe she should try riding Sad Saddle for a change. Oh,
my line.
I'm sorry, but he is misogynistic and she needs to kick him up between the shoulder blades.
I was waiting for this. You gotta try riding Sad Saddle for a change.
He's the one going to be riding side saddle after she's through with him.
Gowns and all.
That's right. Mm. Hey,
guy with the museum that has three side saddles.
Oh, yeah? Oh, man. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, this... We're used to the Flash being kind of the sexist member of the Justice League, but, you know... Vidge's old-fashioned ways are kind of coming into play here, yeah.
Which has no place in our modern society.
Vidge is a little more low-key on there. He's trying to throw the politeness and the bit of the chivalry in there, but it's just not working.
That's worse. I'd rather, if a guy's going to be an asshole, be a straight asshole, and I'll meet him right in the middle. Don't try and be nice about it. I deal with those people all the time. They're like, oh, honey, darling. And I'm like, look here, buddy. This is how it's going to go down.
Well, I think that's where his feelings for about what he thinks of Shiera kind of come into it as well.
I think so, too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, yeah. But I like, you know, she wants to get up and thump him, and Vixen stops her and says, men have fragile egos. To get what you want, you have to know how to talk to them. So do you agree, Cindy?
No, that does not work for me. You know this. We have been married for 27 years. If I want to tell you something, I tell you flat out. Pride and Prejudice is the worst flipping book I've ever read. That book would have been done in 30 pages if somebody just said, here's the deal, here's what's going to happen, we're done. I don't have patience for that.
I know. I just asked you that to wind you up, basically. So.
Oh, you suck.
Yeah. But you know, Shire's really loving this now. So, because now she's got Vixen throwing shade on her, and Vidge is throwing shade on her. So, like we said, Vixen is voiced by Gina Torres, who has voiced her before on the series. And she did indeed star in Firefly and Serenity with vigilante actor Nathan Fillion. And mm-hmm. they were both on a spaceship. So right. Nice reunion here. So when they land on the planet, it's nighttime and Vixen touches her totem necklace and assumes the power of a lizard who can see in the dark. It's very Predator-like.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. There's no mining ship, so that should be their first sign that something is up. So I did like that, you know, when they're getting ready to go out there, Vigilante spins the chamber of his pistol so we can see what he's got loaded inside there. So
I got a comment on that.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know what the hell he has loaded in there. You know, the only thing I can figure out, you know, you've heard of Smith and Wesson. Well, I believe this gun is designed by Standards and Practices.
Yeah.
This is the G.I. Joe gun.
Yes.
Okay. This gun never needs refilling, and this gun is not firing projectiles. It's firing photons or red rounds or some darn thing, because nobody wants a cowboy out there throwing lead around a planet. And, you know, to that extent, you know, given the universe that we're in here in Justice League Unlimited, why would he go out there in space with some earthbound 100-year-old weapon? Technology, you know, he'd take whatever he could find. If he found a weaponeer, a Tony Stark of some kind somewhere in the DC animated universe that could give him a six shooter, something that looks like a six shooter, but could be firing lasers or photon slugs, as I've been calling it, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you how you felt about that. I pretty much feel like you do. It's like, you know, why wouldn't he up his game here? And, you know, he'd keep it in the style of a, you know, a classic six shooter like he's done. It definitely makes sense. But yeah, obviously on Batman the Animated Series, they fired real bullets and, you know, but again, they've gotten away with, there's more adult situations that they don't even really hint at them. They just pretty much come out and say them on this show, and we'll get to some at the end of this episode. But in other ways, they've kind of had to dial back some of that real-world grit of, like, you know, the gun violence and things. So I can see why they did it, and it definitely does feel like the blue-red lasers of G.I. Joe. But at least he's keeping it, you know, it looks like a classic, you know, Western pistol. So, you know.
And when you're heading out into space in a world that has Kryptonians in it, why would you walk up there with six shooters?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They follow the footsteps that they see into the mine, but Shire notices the mine itself is a hologram. Which
because the post doesn't have any shadow.
Yeah, the post doesn't have a shadow. That's a nice bit. They've been suckered into a trap, and they start getting fired upon by lasers. They run for the javelin, and Shire actually calls Vigilante Vidge. So how'd you feel about that?
Of course. Now, the only thing that gets... a little bit confusing here. We've got Vidge and Vix.
Yeah.
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 It's sort of like they were pulling it out of the encyclopedia.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody had the Who's Who binder just sitting there, a bound volume of the original series, and just, you know, pulled it.
It's okay, like, who's going with Hawk Curl? Vidge? Vixen?
Yeah.
Vindicator.
Right. Vanquisher or something. Yeah, I don't know. Vartox. No, why wasn't it Vartox? Come on, you know. I'm not going to do it.
Neither one of us are laughing, Chris. Neither one of us are laughing.
uh, uh, So Vixen uses her totem to activate the powers of a cheetah and runs at super speed, and she meets Shiera, who is carrying Vig to a mountaintop. And I noticed that she's running at super speed in high heels.
Yes.
So.
But again, like I said, Wonder Woman said it first, but again, high heels that fit.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
You got a better idea. I'm open to it.
That's right, yeah. Because he's shooting at her and shooting, and she gets on him for, you know, giving away their position. And she suggests, Vixen suggests, that they fight the bad guys instead of each other.
I'm sorry, but Shiera is correct. I mean, why give their position away? Just keeping them honest. No, you're being a hot dog is what you're doing. I mean, come on.
If you gave me that photon pistol, I'd be doing the exact same thing.
So then Perrin Dole calls out to Shiera, and she looks down to see the Thanagarian forces. And as we said, she's voiced by Elizabeth Pina, who is best known for La Bamba, Rush Hour, and she was the voice of Mirage in The Incredibles.
Uh-huh.
So one of these Hawkmen is a heavy guy with a beard, and I can't help but think of Voltan from
Brian Blessed.
If only if he sounded like Brian Blessed,
I know.
That would have been hilarious. You know, dive! You know, Shiera's alive! You know, but no.
Well, I love Hawk World, so I love all of these variations on the Thanagarian theme.
Oh, yeah, it's really cool. I mean, all the different outfits, and I mean, they did a great job of coming up with the different looks of them, you know, that we saw in Starcrossed, and which we've covered Starcrossed with our friend and writer and producer of Justice League,
yeah,
Rich Fogel. So, yeah, that's a great episode. I like that Vixen says, friend of yours, and Vigilante's response.
Birds of a feather.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just got it in. He does not trust Shiera. He's there because he's to do a job. And gosh darn it, she has to be a girl, too.
Hold up. I thought we were the ones she betrayed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds like she betrayed everybody, cowboy. That's a nice...
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, Vixen's not... I mean, she's not giving her any excuses either.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both holding that against her. And, I mean, honestly, you can understand it. I mean, why would they?
Right.
I mean, she did betray the Justice League / Earth and the Thanagarians.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she really is this pariah of a character. Not pariah from Crisis on Infinite Earth. Thank goodness. But I mean, she really is. I mean, and it's all coming back on her in this episode. It's kind of funny though. The Leaguers, like you said, they're confused about what happened. So I don't guess they knew all the facts about the invasion. So maybe they didn't know that she turned on the Thanagarians.
Right.
I thought that was kind of interesting. So.
I think that's coming up, but you're right that the JLU people, of course, who weren't in the league at that point in time, they were pretty much, you know, free players, freelancers off to the side.
Well, Vigilante even brings up that he was captured by them and held by them and humiliated by them.
Yeah.
So
we're jumping ahead here. But
oh,
yeah,
sorry. Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
Of course, hockey. Pardon my French.
Yeah. Yeah, and he looks at Vixen when he says that, like he's apologizing to her for, like, you know, cursing in front of her, which I thought was kind of funny. But
hockey part, just because my vocalization with that I do on Prairie Justice is partly an uncle that I have, and it's based a little bit, just a tiny little bit of Colonel Potter in there.
Oh yeah, that's yuck. Yeah, I would have rather been Pucky, too. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But Perrin Dole reminds her that Shiera helped the League destroy the hyperspace bypass, and without it, the Thanagarians lost their war. Shiera actually hangs her head at hearing this. So she still has some loyalty to her people, despite them planning on, you know, basically putting a bypass through Earth that would have destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out what happened to Rotalik, who was, you know, their version of, at this point, their version of Hawkman. We'll later get a true version of Hawkman, but it's Katar Hall an anagram of it.
Uh-huh.
He was the leader of the Thanagarian forces, her fiancé, and we get a flashback showing how Hero and the other Thanagarians arrived at Thanagar after the Gordanians had basically ended the war. They fought until Hero's ship was the last remaining one, and then he sent his crew out on a scout ship. He rammed his ship into the Gordanian mothership, but it was too late because they had already won.
Mm-hmm.
So I we don't hear him speak, but we see him, and he's still got all the scars and wounds from his fight with Green Lantern and Shiera, which
right.
I thought was a nice touch. Yeah, so she hangs her head and says, "I didn't know," and Vixen says, "You still have feelings for him," and then she says, "For a lot of people I've let down." Including a certain Green Lantern, I'm assuming.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, now, we saw that Hero was pretty awful to Shiera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he grabbed her by her hair and shocked her with her mace. And
I know.
I mean, he really brutalized her in that episode. It was kind of hard to watch. So, do you think she should feel this way about this guy?
Rose-colored glasses looking back at the past?
Love's complicated.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Considering the way her life has gone ever since, you know, I'm sure that she goes back and looks at number one, considering her luck with number two and with John.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they say all they want's Shiera. If they hand her over, they can walk free. But Vig starts shooting at them. I think this speaks a lot about his character, despite his personal misgivings about Shiera.
So. This is true. That part, he's at this point, I'm like, okay, maybe you're not such a butthead after all.
He might have problems with her, but by golly, he's not going to just give her up to the enemy. So, yeah. So what do you think about that, Gord?
What? That's loco. I got him.
Yep.
Yeah. Be a lot easier without all them bird folk in the way. We should thin the herd first.
Yeah.
She ain't loyal to nobody. But yeah, he's definitely got problems with Shiera.
Yeah, he does. But Vixen even says, "We're Justice League. We don't turn our backs on our teammates." And Vince says, "Still having trouble with that notion, huh?"
Ooh.
So he's going to still ding her, but he's not going to let her die. He's going to protect her.
Yeah.
He's not going to let her sacrifice herself, but he's still going to give her a ton of crap.
Yeah.
So, and we, like you said, we'll find out later. You'll understand even more why as this episode goes along. So, of course, the Thanagarians move on the rocks, and they were hiding behind. They're gone. And Voltan says, I'm going to call him Voltan because I don't know what else to call him.
Yeah.
He says it's a waste of time. They should head back home and join the resistance. So now we know there's actually a resistance on Thanagar.
On the planet, yeah.
Yeah. That's when Krager, who is now an invalid in a giant mech suit, picks him up and insists they are going to kill Shiera.
Yeah.
And he says his head doesn't work so well, but he knows what happened to him was her fault. And later on, he does mention this, but actually, it was Jean forcibly probing his mind that left him in this near vegetative state. But clearly, Perrin is manipulating him into, like, we got to get Shiera. It's all her fault. It's very much like Spock and Valeris in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, which I know is a lot of people have a problem with that, you know, and
because
he pretty much just violates her mind. But, you know, she was also trying to cause an intergalactic war. So, you know, I mean, get over
that's
it, people.
The theme that we have kicking around comics about that time. You know, we're here about 2005, and, of course, we've just had the crossover that Chris will not name.
Oh, God, yeah.
That discussed lobotomy.
Yes.
And, of course, that became a theme for the next 5 years in DC Comics.
Yeah.
And I believe this is sort of, you know, Bruce Timm picking this up and goes, let's touch on this a little bit. John went in and played with this guy's mind a little bit, and now he's walking around and he can't finish a sentence.
Yeah. It ties into this, you know, it ties into this season really well, too, that gray area that the Justice League has stepped in repeatedly, and their past actions in the other seasons are being examined in ways that, you know, most shows would have just, you know, left it on the floor and never picked it back up. But like you said, they're going to, this guy was left, you know, with his mind just scrambled. And he's, all he can focus on is just hate and destroying the target he's, you know, been told to, you know, to go after. And he's got a tube running into his chest, into this mech suit. It's really, he's got like a halo thing around his, into his helmet that's right. Keeping his head steady. I mean, he's a pathetic creature, really. You kind of, even though he was like a really kind of a skeevy little dirt bag in Starcross, you really kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
Justice League of America, Windexing Cerebellum since 1959.
Yeah.
That's right. Krager is voiced by Hector Elizondo, who he's best known for Pretty Woman, Beverly Hills Cop 3, The Princess Diaries 2, and he was on that Tim Allen comedy Last Man Standing for 10 years. I didn't even realize that show ran for 10 years, but I looked it up, and yeah, he was on there for 10 years. And he's great. Hector Elizondo is always great and everything.
I think him as a doctor or administrator or something on Chicago Hope.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's been in everything, but he's always just one of those just A-plus character actors that, you know, it's like, oh, it's him, you know, and he's really good here because he's playing the same character, but he's in a way different place than he was before, yeah.
What I love about this series, they are just throwing the talent into these shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess everybody just really wanted to work on, you know, they knew this was good stuff, that this was well written, and I mean, they got an incredible caliber of people from the Batman the Animated Series onward to this show. I mean, and I mean, they still get good actors to voice in the current projects, but, you know, Andrea Romano was the, you know, this was the golden age of, of voice acting at Warner Brothers in a lot of ways, yeah.
It's just Scotty doing five different voices on Star Trek, the animated series.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or Lou Scheimer, you know, where his kid's doing the voices. Yeah.
That's what I was trying to think of. Thank you, Lou Scheimer.
Yeah. And I mean, God bless him. He gave us a lot of entertainment, but you could always tell it was Lou Scheimer just doing a voice. So, yeah. Voltan says Shire was an instructor in the espionage wing. He says she's better trained in than the five of us put together. So, I like that. I mean, even amongst the Thanagarians,
she's
like the top. She's like they're intimidated by her.
Yeah,
which I think is really cool. And it was also Espionage Wing would also explain how good she was at infiltrating the League and duping the Earth. And,
right.
So.
Anybody here has a problem with that?
No, that's right. There's a nice scene where Vidge nearly shoots a low-flying Hawkman, but Shire points out that he's trying to learn the position. She says she knows because she's one of them, and the other two just look at her because, you got to feel for Vigilante and Vixen because it's like getting dumped in the middle of a family feud.
Yeah.
You know, along the
way. They're like, this isn't our fight, but okay.
Right, right.
They don't want her to get kidnapped and taken back, but they really don't want to be here at all.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I thought it was a nice touch that Perrin, you know, figures out that Shiera is staying on the ground to be with the other two.
Right.
I thought that was a nice bit. She's like, you know, the one guy says, well, we don't care about them. And she's like, yeah, but she does.
Uh-huh.
And so they're going to use that to their advantage. And you're right, Vigilante calls Vixen Vix. And this part got me. He asked her about her animal powers and then accidentally slides into some casual racism, suggesting that the black Vixen should know about the jungle.
Yeah, I'm like,
oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That went right through me. I'm sorry. Wow.
Yeah. She's like, she's like, what makes you think I'm supposed to know about the jungle? I live in a loft in Chelsea.
Yeah. I'm like, dude.
That made me think about the fun bit in the Futurama episode, the Star Trek episode, where William Shatner tells George Takei, it's like, And George, you hit him with a karate chop, and he's basically like, what makes you think I know karate? Just because I'm Japanese descent, I should know karate or
right.
something? He's like, well, you never talk about yourself. And then George Takai says, you never ask.
Yeah. Just,
that was a gag, you know, but this is like, I think she took it a little, he didn't mean it exactly that way, but she took it that way. She took offense at it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, he could have said, well, you've got animal powers, and I know there's a lot of animals in the jungle, so could you, like, get us out of here, you know, or something?
But yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess I could just say, Vig, you've just been hanging around a little bit too long on Coffee Row in Cheyenne.
Yeah.
Some of those guys, you just got to stop listening to them.
Well, and he can be as progressive as he wants to be, but his best friend is literally a knight that, like,
from medieval times.
So come on, you know. You know, and then you bring up the thin the herd thing when Shire suggests that, you know, they should split up, and he says, well, maybe we should thin the herd. And she and Vixen just asks him, you're still loyal to them, aren't you? And Vig's response cuts deep. She ain't loyal to nobody.
Right.
It's like, ooh. I mean, whenever the opportunity comes up, they really,
dang,
both
yeah.
of them really
I
stick
love the her. Dialogue that's coming up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We should be understanding about her position. Well, ma'am, all this understanding is liable to get us killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and she says, I'm in charge, you have to. And he says, what, trust you? Seems to me that's been tried.
I mean, whew.
Wow. Yeah. And that's
there,
when...
Right there.
Yeah.
There, there. He's not letting up.
No, and Vixen reminds her that she's mission leader, and he says...
She's a Thanagarian.
Yep. That's when we learn about how they both fought in the invasion, but Vig was captured.
So did I, for all the good it done me. Filthy Hawks caught me, locked me up in a tiny cell. Your people, Hawk Girl!
And she reminds him that she does not like to be called that now. But yeah, that was a great bit right there. And the fact that he called them Filthy Hawks...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but you understand why he feels that way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they invaded Earth. They were literally going to destroy the Earth to make literally a bypass.
Yeah.
This is PTSD coming out.
Yes, it is.
And it's leaking ever since the start of this show. And it's finally, the gaskets have finally blown.
Have you seen Picard Season 3, Gord?
Absolutely.
That reminded me of Captain Shaw in the 10 forward when he went off on Picard about the Battle of Wolf 349 with the Borg. That's what it reminded me of.
Mm-hmm. Simmered and finally he couldn't simmer no more.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know a little bit about PTSD and I know how this works. It just goes out sideways when you don't need it to.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really strong, powerful moment. I mean, I can totally understand where I've not been in a situation like that, but you've got to put yourself in his position. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, he's with somebody he doesn't trust because of what she did. And I can understand that. And he's literally dumped. He's like put back into this conflict and he's supposed to be following orders from somebody who is from that, the very race that imprisoned him, humiliated him.
Right.
And he's supposed to trust her and follow her.
Right.
I mean, yikes. How could you not be, you know,
yeah.
Abrasive at the least?
Yeah.
You know.
But so. Now that the pieces are all out there on the jungle floor, pretty soon here it's going to be time to put them together.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen.
Shire says if they don't trust her, then they shouldn't have to follow her. She's going to turn herself in. And Vixen says they've been through this. And Shire... responses, what do you care? I'm just a filthy hawk, right? I like that this show, I mean, the fact that she brings it back up, it kind of dipped into that being a racial slur.
Right.
Because, like, you know, she's using that word, those words, like, this is what you called me, this is what you think I am, you know. That's, you know, I mean, it's, and Dwayne McDuffie's scripting this, you
right,
know, and
right,
he's obviously
yeah.
a black man. So, I mean, and he's just so God, Dwayne McDuffie was just so good.
Yeah.
Nothing against Stan Berkowitz, who wrote the story, but God, the dialogue just is awesome. Yeah. Whew. And Shire says maybe her people have the right to pass judgment on her. So what do you guys think about this? I mean, she is a war criminal to the Thanagarians.
Right, she is.
I mean, you know, I know she's our Justice League member, that she's our hero to a point, but and we all like her to a point, but, you know, whether you like everything she did, obviously you're not supposed to. But, I mean, what do you guys think? I mean,
everybody in this scene is conflicted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They want to get angry with her. She wants to defend herself, but she knows she's defending the indefensible.
Yeah.
They want to get angry with her, but that's a teammate still.
Yeah.
All came in the same ship. We got to go home in the same ship.
They ain't going back in the same ship, dude.
No, they're not.
Ship, shall I say.
Yeah, but they're all going back home. They're going to be in the same ship, but it's not the same ship.
Sorry,
they arrived
I
yet.
Couldn't be.
Maybe I could just say shift.
And then Vixen says all she's heard about is how tough and brave Shire is, that she doesn't quit. And she says she was even a little jealous of her, but she must have been... John must have been talking about another Shire. So,
yeah.
And in some ways he was, because Shire has deeply changed since she left at the end of Starcross. We've talked about that on this show. Like the beer guzzling, jump in first and just start whacking at stuff with her mace, Hot Girl is gone.
Yes, she
you know,
is.
Hot Girl is dead, which is one reason why she got so honked off when he called her that. You know, she betrayed two worlds, and she hasn't even figured out who or what she is right now. Without those rigid affiliations of Thanagarian, warrior, Justice Leaguer, who is she? You know, she's kind of none of the things she was now, other than, well, she's still a Justice Leaguer, but she's dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
So, they, like we said, Vigilante says, we're in this together. That's how it's done. So, you know, again... Guy, he's got a lot of problems with her, but he's got a lot of personal problems with her, but he's following, you know, that's a teammate, like you said, Gord, and, you know, they're gonna do what they have to protect her. They're not gonna let her sacrifice herself for their benefit, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, now that we spilled our bile, it's time to suck it back up and get back to work.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They move out, and the Thanagarians attack, and Krager says she took Talik away from them. We mentioned this when we discussed Starcross with Rich Fogel, but there seemed to be a bit more than just friendship on Krager's side for Ro Talik.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally in his mind had statues of the two of them, like side
together.
By side.
Yeah.
So there's definitely it might be one-sided, but there's definitely a bromance.
Yes. For
it, at the very least, maybe more. Which, you know, hey, that's cool that they, you know, again, they're being subtle. They couldn't get away with it back then.
Right.
But you can definitely read that into it. And he's even more honked off that, you know, Shire's actions, because he was jealous of Shire.
Oh, yeah.
Like more than just command, you know. So, yeah, it was definitely there. He does mention the green one did something to his mind, something bad, you know, so... you know, you got to feel sorry for the guy again, you know. But he says, I miss Commander Talik. I miss thinking without pain, but no one is going to miss you.
Right.
So, yeah, this ain't Shire's best day. That's
no,
for sure.
No.
yeah. Krager and the other Thanagarian have Shire pinned down. She's barely deflecting their blast with her mace. And when Vixen, she touches her... totem amulet, and she takes on the power of an elephant and leaps out of the tree on top of them and just like squashes
Wah.
Them.
Wah.
That's a boss move.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Vigilante has been hurt, and we found out he had a wound on his leg earlier that he didn't say anything about.
See what it did to those nice white pants?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I see if he had like really, I mean, maybe they're white denim. I don't know. But, you know, if he'd had on a pair of Levi's, he might not have got tore up so
hurt
bad.
Hurt so bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. So Vidge has been hurt and Shire flies off with him, but Krager's mech claw shocks Vixen. The Thanagarian soldier is about to shoot her when she offers up Shire, and that's a great commercial break.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, maybe, you know, and I mean, given their conversations,
right,
you're like, okay, does she really mean this?
Right.
I mean, we're kind of sure Vigilante wouldn't do it, despite him probably having stronger feelings, but again, as she explains to them, they're kind of like, well, why would you give her up? It's like, well, me and her are after the same man.
Uh-huh.
So...
Spill the tea, girl.
And maybe if Krager's got enough of his noggin left, he's thinking, oh, I had the same problem because Shire and me were after the same man. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Vixen says she needs a med kit. There's one in the ship. And Krager agrees to it. Don't let the brain damage guy make
it. I know. The guy, other guy's just like, all right.
He outranks him.
Yeah.
So he's gonna follow him, I guess. Yeah. Now, Vixen gets in the ship, kicks the guy crap out of the guy. You knew that was going to happen. But then she puts his gun back in his hand and says he'll need it later.
No, it's not the gun. It's the med kit. It's the...
Oh!
That's what that was. No, no.
It's for pain relief. Oh!
Yeah.
Gosh,
she's
thanks,
like,
guys.
You'll need this later.
That makes so much more sense. Thank you. Because I thought she put the gun back
in his
hand.
No, because he says, this will take the pain away. And then she whops him and says, oh, here, you're going to need this.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. I'm glad you noticed that and I didn't, because that really bothered me. Because I thought literally it was a setup for something that they then didn't do anything with.
No. It was the pain relief.
Oh, okay. That's okay. That's what happens when you've looked at too many. You're digging deep into like minutia things, and then obvious things like that go over your head sometimes. So sorry about that. She calls Jean, and although he responds, their call is cut off by Perrin, who rips out the wiring, and then she has Vixen at gunpoint. And then Shire and Vidge know that something's wrong. Shire is about to give herself up, and Vidge says,
hey, damn girl, I ain't gonna allow it.
Yeah, he pulls a pistol on her to stop her, and she just looks at him and says,
please.
He should have shot her in the wing. It would have healed back, but she couldn't fly.
Yeah,
I thought that was great. And even I know that means go with God. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask our daughter. She's taking Spanish right now.
Midge's way of saying, I'm trying to think of the Ned Flanders line, Godspeed, little doodle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then a hawkman sneaks up on Vidge while he's washing his face off in a pond. I think this is the only time we see him with his neckerchief down.
I think
in this series. It's so brief you can't really make out his features.
No.
Yeah, he kind of looks like Bruce Wayne, obviously.
Yeah. I was thinking he looked like the Fred McMurray Captain Marvel.
Yeah, he kind of, yeah, I could see that. Yeah, yeah, he kind of did. And I love, he says, you know, it appears you got the drop on me, partner. But then the Thanagarian steps into a vine, which lifts him in the air upside down. Classic, you know, classic vine in the tree trap. And then Vidge tells him they're going to have a little confab about the location of the spaceship. So what did you think about this little scene, Gord?
I like that trap because how many times especially in Golden Age, I don't know how many Golden Age Vidge you've ever read, but him and Stuff are always in death traps, hanging upside down. And I went, well, Vidge, you finally learned how to make one.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
He spoke prematurely on that.
Yeah, I love that line, yeah.
When he says, we're going to have the little confab concerning the location of your spaceship, that is some classic Vidge, too, sometimes, when he tends to get somebody off to the side. You see, Vidge has finally got, he's back. He's got his juice back.
Yeah.
His mojo. This is more the more calmer, collected guy that gets things done and figures things out and gets out of traps. Not just going off on blasting the six shooters. That's usually not him. In fact, I've been getting frustrated in the last few Vigilante stories of the Golden Age. I mean, he hadn't had the gun out of his holster in 10 issues.
Yeah, I'd say as the, you know, as DC became more sanitized over the years, he probably pulled it less and less, I bet. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like I always say about Wyatt Earp. He hit more people with his gun than he ever shot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So then Parandol, Krager, and the others meet Shira in the sky. Krager has Vixen's head in the metal claws of his mech suit. Shira says she'll give herself up. They don't hurt her. She drops her mace, the soldiers grab her, and Krager drops Vixen. Then Vid shows up flying the Thanagarian ship wildly, and what's he say, Gord?
Well, something like this. Concern, dang busted horse thief and alien control panel, but shank, nobody can't work proper. It's there. I can't tell you how many times a day I cuss at things like that. So.
Hey, at least it's sanitized, you know. So.
Yeah. You folks, and student driver up here.
Yeah, that's a great bit. So he flies underneath her. You know, she does a soft landing on the roof, which, of course, you know, that always happens in these things. It's like nobody, the velocity of them falling and hitting metal never comes into play. You know, of course. Yeah. You know, I guess she could have maybe used some of her latent powers to land, but it does kind of, and this is a great moment for Vigilante, but could she just, like, touched it and flew like an eagle or something? Or
I don't know.
I don't know. I thought she could, like, at least float down to the ground like a bird or something. I don't know, but it's a great moment for Vigilante, so I won't say anything against it. He even gets a chance to yell an actual yeehaw, so, you know, that's cool.
Well, you see, this goes back to even in some Golden Age things. This is how he got the motorbike in the first place. Okay. First few issues, all Vig was kind of running around and getting taxi cabs and things like that. And finally, he started to get smart and started to steal police motorcycles. And finally, he got his own, which he called the Gas-Eating Bronc for a little while. And I think for about 6 years, it's just called the Gas-Eating Bronc.
Nice. Nice. So yeah. So this is his kind of MO. He boosts vehicles for his own use. So that's cool. Nice callback. Shira breaks loose and starts fighting the soldiers. Vixen makes it into the ship's doors, but Perrin flies in. They start fighting. As you pointed out, much to Vidge's consternation. And Perrin's got Wolverine claws. They even make a snick sound.
Yep.
When she pops them. So.
That's a good callback, too, because if you remember Vixen, you know, she had barely any presence in the DC universe until the Justice League Detroit came along.
Yeah.
And who did try to make her look like? Wolverine.
Oh, that's true, with the haircut. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that was a bad look for her. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Vixen eventually kicks her out of the ship. And Vidge asks if she's okay, and she says, I will be if you let me drive.
So everybody admits that, except him, that he's a bad driver.
he's still got 20 more hours in the flight simulator. So, you know, or in the Javelin to train. So, you know. Now, why they let him fly to begin with, I guess that counted as part of his training. So, Krager's going all nuts, grabbing Shira, repeating, destroy you, over and over. She bites him in the chest.
Yes.
You're like, did she bite him? I'm like, yep. Then goes behind him and rips out his power source.
And he doesn't have wings, so he's plummets to the ground. So I think he's...
Yeah, I think he's gone. I mean, that might have been what was keeping him alive, the power source. Plus, it was obviously letting him fly. And yeah, so I think she just killed this dude.
Yeah.
What do you think, Gord?
I didn't really pay that much attention to it, sorry.
Oh, okay, that's okay. But I don't know how he would have survived. Maybe he did, maybe there was enough, you know, maybe that thing was strong enough to survive that fall. I don't know.
No.
Maybe, and not crush him, I don't know. So, of course, they, you know.
And now, how are they going to get off of that planet ever? Because think about it. You just have the resistance. There's not a way to mount a rescue party to come get them.
Nope.
I mean, I doubt it.
Nope. I was going to ask that thing at the end. But yeah, I feel like if any, the people that survived are stuck on that planet.
Uh-huh.
And it seemed like it was a barren planet without any humanoid life on it anyway. Or that part they were on anyway. So.
It's a Class M planet.
Yeah, it's a Class M planet. You know, yeah, they got off. No, they could breathe oxygen, you know. So, yeah. So, of course, they pick Shire up in the ship and come back to the Watchtower. The League and crew react to the arrival of a Thanagarian ship in the Watchtower. And Green Lantern pushes past Wave Rider, Nemesis, Zatanna, Dove, and Iron Man. We also see Rocket Red there. Vibe and Gypsy are standing by as Vixen and Shire carry Vidge to a little mini ambulance. The question's there as well. And Green Lantern says, "I was worried about you." But they both just walk past him. Was he talking to one of them or both of them?
I don't know.
He does call out to both of them later.
Yeah.
As they're walking away. So
I would imagine at that point, John read their mind and said, "John, you're on your own."
That's right. He phased through the wall and just kind of left, you know.
You almost back into the bushes.
Yeah. Vixen says, "When do you want to do this?" And Shire answers, "No time like the present." And poor Green Lantern, he's flummoxed. He said, "Oh, man, this is going to be ugly."
Yeah.
I've had this happen.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Ooh. That would be a bad feeling. I don't think I've ever had that happen. So.
My wife was once introduced to one of my old girlfriends, and apparently they had a good chat. So.
Oh, gotcha.
To this day, I don't want to know.
That's right. Then we cut to the commissary, and they're laughing about Green Lantern.
Uh-huh.
Vixen even gives him grief for loving old Yeller, which has been previously established by Shire as his favorite movie.
Yep.
Yeller. Of course, Green Lantern would have to be weakened by old Yeller.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
I've never thought of that.
Me either. Good catch.
That's awesome.
Better than wood.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if you have ever seen that movie, especially the first viewing, if you don't cry, you don't have a heart.
Oh no, that's for sure.
I didn't cry when old Yeller died. Well, now we got something going on off screen here. What happened to Vigilante? Is this where he gets his big screen TV now, where he's recuperating?
Good point. Yeah, where he, you know,
on that flatbed and go haul him away. He doesn't even give I think his last line is "Yeehaw."
Yeah,
I think you're right. Yeah, and that's a shame. But you know, luckily we'll see him again, and we do get to learn about his big screen TV and his Clint Eastwood marathon. So, Vixen says about Green Lantern, "He's such a Marine. You should see his underwear drawer. He folds his socks." And then Shire says,
"I have seen his underwear drawer."
Now, we know these characters aren't just holding hands, but again, these are very adult implications.
Yes.
You can't watch with the kids.
No, I mean, the kids aren't going to pick up on all that. And that's what's really clever about it, is it's like, it's there, but it's not beating you. I mean,
one of those cases, if we're sitting on the couch and the kids are sitting between us, I mean, I remember doing this when we were watching this episode. I looked over Andrew's head and looked at Chris, and we both went, "Oh?"
Yeah.
But Andrew had no idea.
No, he didn't get it. And in fact, I remember Andrew going back and watching these later and saying, "Man, I didn't catch some of that stuff in there."
Yeah.
I think that's why the Adam West Batman keeps coming around. You know, you watch it when you're small because it's neat and it's got cool villains and it's got punchy powwow. And then you get about 10, 15 years later and goes, "Oh, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Girl here."
Yeah. Yeah. Vixen says that John Green Lantern still has feelings for Shire, and Shire knows this, but Vixen adds, "Is it mutual?" And she pauses and says,
"What's not to love?"
Yeah. Vixen then tells her, "Whenever she starts a book or a movie, no matter how bad it is, she finishes it. I just like to see things through." And then Shire ends the episode with,
"On guard."
Yeah.
I mean, she's gonna fight for John.
Yeah, and they clink glasses and whatever they're drinking, and that's how the episode ends. So yeah, we don't know what happens to Vigilante, but yeah, I guess he got comped with a widescreen TV and back at that point, a Clint Eastwood DVD box set or something. Yeah. So
he's not holding his socks.
That's right. So should Shire, what do you think about this? Should Shire just move on, or should she fight for her man, Cindy?
It's one of those cases. She knows, you know, I think they both know that they're meant to be together. And it's just one of those cases. I mean, you can't help yourself, you know?
I don't think at this point she knows about Warhol.
No, no, but I'm saying no. She knows that John is her soulmate.
Right. But she doesn't know what... It's funny because they're meant to be together. They literally are meant to be together according to the ironclad future of the DCAU, which apparently it is. They are meant to be together.
Uh-huh.
But... And John, I think that's another reason why John has been, like, kind of weird with Vixen, because now he knows he's supposed to end up with Shiera, so what's he doing, you know?
Right.
Which, you know, that would be weird, you know?
Yeah.
It would be a very, I mean, I know he's a Green Lantern, he's seen some weird crap, but that, at that personal level, that would be kind of hard to digest, I think. Yeah. So, so what do you think about the whole thing? Gord, as somebody that watched the series but hasn't been doing a podcast all the time about it, about the whole triangle thing here.
I think about Jon Stewart. I don't think of either Shiera or Vixen. I think of Cat Matui.
Oh, right.
And I don't know. I guess I've almost kind of seen this Shiera-Jon thing as a little bit of an add-on in that light. And I realize it's not the same universe, and yes, you can go wherever you want, but I've always kind of sort of, when I think of Jon Stewart, I just, you know, think of the, you know, the alternate Sinestro there from Karugar, of Katma.
Yeah.
And he actually did marry her, and they had a tragic ending.
Yep.
Maybe this is somewhere after that. I don't know. I don't know where Katma Tui or the rest of the Corps fits into this.
Well, she was on here, and they did have a romance before it's hinted at. So,
yes.
Yeah. So, I don't think they weren't married, but she trained John, I believe, and they definitely had a thing. Yeah.
Oh, I've forgotten that, if I remembered it at all. So.
Oh yeah, she just showed up a couple times. So, but yeah, it I get you. Yeah, comic book wise, you know, and I remember thinking, wait a minute, is she supposed to be with Hawkman? You know.
Yeah.
So, and then. Well,
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so...
I just thought of another reason why we might have a show here with Hawk Girl and Vigilante together.
Why's that?
Well, if you go back to the Golden Age Hawk Girl, who began life, of course, in comics, as Shiera Sanders.
Yes.
And by the laws of Roy Thomas, they have to be cousins.
Oh!
That's right, yeah. And they're all related to Speed Saunders, and
yeah.
They're all. Somebody changed the spelling a little bit along the way, but they're all related. Yeah. You're right.
So if they got all of those together, you know, when they came to Kentucky, they could visit the Colonel.
That's right.
Wait for that plan.
Da-da-dum-tsh. Yeah. That's awesome. They could stop hang by Corbin, Kentucky, the home of KFC, the original KFC.
About 3 hours from here.
Yeah. We've been there. I have to throw this in because I don't know when I'm ever going to, but you and me probably talked about this before, Gord, but I did actually write an article in Back Issue Magazine about the one-shot appearance of the Vigilante's nephew, the Swashbuckler, in a Batman Detective Comics story. Yeah, so
that just gives me so much trouble. I resign myself to think that it's just Booster Gold.
Oh,
Vigilante.
Okay, gotcha.
Michael Carter.
Yo, that's right. Yeah.
I've never resolved that one way or the other, how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I get all confused about the, even back then, the Earth 1 and Earth 2 and all that. But let's not get into that. We should probably get into our superlatives here.
Power action feature.
For power action feature, we have, that's like the best, like greatest action moment, or the cool move, whoever you thought had that. So did you have one for that, Gord?
Oh, well, it's got to be the Vigilante unloading that photon blasts.
There you go.
Let me think about that. Bang, 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 bang. And he's fanning, just like Joan Wayne. He's fanning the pammer. bang, 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 bang. And yeah. I'm doing it right now.
That's cool. What about you, Cindy?
I think when she pulls the power cell out of Craigler. Sorry.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I think I'm going to give it to Vixen and her elephant move. Because yeah. It's just like she jumps out of that tree, and I love how they do the effect of the animal around her.
Yeah.
It's a really cool way to visualize it. And then she just like lands on him and squashes him. She's strong looking, but she's still
petite.
Other than her chest, she's petite. You know, and I mean, she's just like crushing this mech suit and this other guy underneath it. So it's really cool.
That is, she stays on him.
Yeah.
You can't move. I weigh like an elephant.
Yeah.
I love it when powers work like that in unknown ways that aren't dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, they're sort of a static power. And yeah, he can't move.
Yeah, that's cool. It's almost like, you know, putting Mjolnir on something.
Yeah.
You can't move it. It's just going to stay there and just lay on your chest or something, you know. So it's cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's like that meme of Spider-Man trying to go to the toilet and Mjolnir's on the lid.
Yeah, that's right.
Rotating chairperson.
So for rotating chairperson, I can't imagine who you pick for this, Gord.
Oh, got to be Shiera.
Oh, okay.
I'd take Shiera. I mean, she had to fight for that leadership role, even though she was being challenged on all fronts, but she kept it.
Yeah, that's true. What about you, Cindy?
I would say Vixen, because even though I think she knows that she's going to lose the fight for John, but she is self-confident enough that she's not going to go quietly into the night. She's like, no.
Mm.
She could have just rolled over. I mean, I'm not talking about the action on the planet. I'm talking about, it's one of those cases. She's like, no, I'm not going to take the easy way out and just walk away. Mm. No.
Yeah, I mean, she could say, clearly you guys have something going that I should just get out of the way of, but she's not, so.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with this one, because I think Vixen is a little, you know, I think for some of the reasons you said, and I think that Vixen, she didn't have as much of a traumatic experience as Vigilante did, so I think she's a little more level-headed in this one than him because of that,
mm-hmm.
but... you're right. Shiera did, you know, she was willing to sacrifice herself for her teammates. And that's a pretty good leader.
Yes.
You know, I mean, despite what they thought of her, she was trying to do what was best for them. And she didn't, you know, she didn't really hold it against them. I mean, she kind of understood where they were. I mean, she hated it, but, you know, she kind of just took it in stride and went on with it. So.
Honorable mention, you know, Vigilante was unusually uncool through much of this, as Cindy has pointed out, and rightfully so. He just wasn't himself. He had a burner saddle about Shiera there in the first place. He was a little bit off because, you know, it's the first time he's piloted this ship, both ships, and, you know, he just needed to, you know, spill juice on the floor and finally get himself back together to his good old Griggs, you know, a little bit more cool cowboy Greg Saunders.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Justice League Communicator.
So what did you guys have for Justice League Communicator, your favorite line or exchange? What you have, Gord?
Let me try it again. Concerned dang busted horse thieving alien control paddle, which can't nobody work proper.
Yeah,
I finally did it.
You did it. Yeah, that was mine. That was mine too. Or either that one, or what was yours, Cindy? Before I.
Well, again, I would agree. Is either because I'm looking at Chris's notes. Is again Vigilante cussing about the ship's controls or the underwear drawer conversation?
Yeah.
And he's such a marine. You should see his underwear drawer. He folds his socks.
I have seen his underwear drawer.
So. They're both really a lot of fun. So, but we'll give it to Vigilante because Gord's here.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Comic connections.
For comic connections, I mean, beyond what Gord just pointed out, that, you know, Shiera, a version of Shiera and Greg Sanders are probably related, according to Roy Thomas, because, you know, Dick Grayson and Bob Grayson or whatever that was Robot Man's friend had to be related, right? So,
Ted Knight.
Yep, Sandra, Ted Knight. Yeah.
It was like I had Michael Bailey string all over the place connecting everything to Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. But are there any other comic connections we missed here?
I don't think so. I think I got them all.
Yeah, I don't think there's... I mean, this was more of a callback to the series itself, the in-universe of the animated universe, the DCAU. So definitely a callback to Star-Crossed. So, you know, and I like the fact that they filled in... What were all these other heroes doing?
Yes.
You know, they weren't... Because most of these characters just popped up in Initiation, the first episode of Unlimited. So we didn't, you know, we didn't know what they were doing, but they were all fighting the Thanagarian invasion. We were just focused on the seven Justice Leaders. I mean, we knew about Aquaman and Dr. Fate and some of those characters, but we didn't know about the characters we hadn't met before in this universe. So, and there's the Firefly connection, too.
When the second series JLU started, and I'm going, oh boy, we're going to see all of these characters. And then one of the first episodes that come up, even though it's a great one, this little piggy, and I'm going, oh, Wonder Woman and Batman. Excuse me? I thought there were supposed to be other characters. But, you know, to their grace, you know, we got to the question, which was just incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, who would ever expect to see the question in animation?
Yeah, exactly. I know when we covered, like, the second episode is the adaptation of For the Man Who Has Everything, literally a Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman episode. And I never thought about that, really, but several of our listeners, including Siskoid, pointed out, yeah, this wasn't a good second episode because you literally just opened it up to the whole DC universe and you're focusing on the big three characters everybody knows together.
Right.
So, yeah.
You have to wonder, is this going to be Justice League Unlimited or Justice League plus Wallpaper?
Right, yeah. Right. But episodes like this clearly show, because, I mean, yes, Shire is a founding member, but, you know, she's not Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, or even Flash and Green Lantern. So, you know, you take her and then you take two, you know,
characters. Important plot thread to go to. Very important.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Electricity is evil.
So, okay, electricity is evil. So what did you have for that one, Gord?
Well, that's I can't remember quite where that part happens, but Shiera pulls this sort of a double globe power pack.
Yeah.
Out of a ship in midair. Yeah, that's definitely very evil. Very, very evil.
Yeah, it is. Interestingly, Shiera barely uses her mace defensively here.
No.
Offensively here.
Offensively,
Barely uses it offensively here. Defensively, she's blocking lasers.
Yeah.
But she doesn't,
mainly uses it as a flashlight.
Right. She doesn't, turn it on and, strike at them. So it makes me wonder... Is it because she has that guilt complex for the Thanagarians? She doesn't want to strike out against them, or
right? Well, and also, I wonder what happens. You know, at this point, going into it, she's going to a planet that she thinks has a ton of raw nth metal. What happens if they come together?
That's true.
I wonder
if it really did have any of that, and she struck it, would the whole planet blow up or something?
It's a thought.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, good point.
Nth metal is that thing that just, you know, they just never been quite defined it.
No.
It seems to be able to do whatever you need it to do.
Yeah, it definitely.
Kind of handy.
It's Deus Ex Machina metal. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So what are your final thoughts on this one, Gord?
I thought it was just a wonderful episode. You mentioned a lot about the changing of the name to Hunter's Moon. And... You know, I guess when you live out in the country, and you guys do to an extent, you know, you get names for the moons like Harvest Moon and Blue Moon, and these are real things that people actually do. And the Hunter's Moon is always the one that comes up in October, of course.
Uh-huh.
It all comes back to Frankenstein. Yeah. But, you know, it's a real thing. And the fact that this took place on this planet and in this nocturnal situation. It really added a eerie part of it that wasn't supernatural. It was just a sort of almost, I think somebody said Predator. You know, this was a little bit like Predator. It's a battle of wills between two forces, and either one of these forces on either side don't get along either. So I think this was just superb storytelling. And I'm really surprised that IMDb had this ranked so low.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It was one of the lower ones. But, I mean, I think part of it is because it kind of sits outside the Cadmus arc, and everybody's all about that, you know, the Cadmus arc in this, especially in this season. So that's probably why. But I think it was smart that they gave us some breathers from it. I mean, because when it came back up, you were like, oh, wait, this is all tying into that.
Right.
And so it didn't wear out its welcome. Because, you know.
Serial storytelling does that.
Yeah.
It takes, I guess they call that a bottle episode in television.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Yeah. What did you think about this one, Cindy?
I mean, I thought it was really good. It's exploring the whole thing. You know, it's a good arc build for Shiera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good spotlight for... of course it's we're going to see over the, especially next season, we're going to see the exploration of the love triangle that's going to become a square when they add another character.
Yeah.
To the Green Lantern Hawk, well, Shiera, Green Lantern Shiera Vixen triangle. So I think that was nice. I think it was a nice spotlight for Vigilante, and it took a little, we didn't know this character. I mean, if you know the comic book character, you're going to obviously, you know, like him. It's like, because he's always been a very cool, likable character. But I like how they gave him some depth and made him, you know, gave him some, you know, some reasons to not trust Shiera. You know, the backstory they gave him in this universe was a really strong one. And like you said, they're exploring PTSD and that's another thing. I mean, this is, again, it's bringing up the morality of each of these heroes. The founders, now including even Wonder Woman, who was her biggest detractor, have forgiven Shiera, but her reputation is probably going to always be somewhat damaged amongst the unlimited members of the League. So, and she feels like she deserves to be hounded by her people as well, you know. So, I mean, it's you know, this show isn't giving you the easy answer is not everything's wrapped up in a bow at the end. The characters kind of come around, like you said. They get it all out, and they kind of move on, but they all know that they have these feelings, and they've got to kind of work past them, you know. Mm-hmm. So we should all get along the way the Justice League's able to get the problems out, move on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like we said, I don't think we never saw the Thanagarians again.
Mm-mm.
So I'm assuming they're marooned on that planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, I thought this was a great callback to Hawk World.
Yeah.
Comic-wise.
Yeah, that's true too.
That's a comic that has taken a beating. Not because it was a bad series, but the way it ended up interpreted as time went on, just because DC didn't have the guts to say, hey, this happened in the past.
Right, yeah. It's all about the continuity that it's despite the fact it was a good series, it always gets flagged for, it messed up Hawkman Forever. No, bad editorial decisions messed up Hawkman Forever.
Yes. Failure to write things out on a chalkboard and let people know what's going on ruined Hawkman.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, Gord, thank you so much for stopping by. It was a pleasure talking to you. I couldn't think of anybody I'd rather talk about this episode with. And when Vid shows back up, we'll definitely have to have you on the episode again. If you're willing to drive back the gas-eating bronc, yeah.
Well, I tip my hat here to Miss Cindy.
Well, thank you.
Yep, exactly. I see there's some chivalry, and you did enjoy that.
Well, that was not being chivalrous, and you know it, and I know it. I know he's your favorite character, but he was still a boogerhead in this episode. gone.
Thanks for letting me come play in your sandbox.
Oh, no, no problem. Tell us more about Prairie Justice.
Oh, you've heard of that. Well, yes. Prairie Justice, the Greg Saunders Vigilante Podcast, is an examination of Greg Saunders, the original character, the one who doesn't wear a ski mask, was introduced in the Golden Age in Action Comics, whose Superman was the warm-up act to for 13 years in Action Comics. And I'm going through his index-wise, episode by episode, issue by issue, when I can get to it. And along the way, I'm also doing other appearances, such as his membership in the Seven Soldiers of Victory with Shining Knight and all the rest, and any other thing that comes along within continuity, such as his All-Star Squadron appearances, which I'm thankfully past now because there weren't many of them. And I was spending most of my Vigilante podcast talking about other characters.
Yeah.
But we're back to him and stuff. And I think we're probably winding down with the last of the Mort Meskin, and I hate to think about that. But, you know, he had a long run from 1941 to 1954. And then, of course, another renaissance in the 1970s. And then there was the James Robinson miniseries in the 1990s. And not a lot, really, since, other than just kind of peekaboos and wallpaper appearances around the DC Universe. But I think he's still an amazing, excellent character. He doesn't wear a cape, and he doesn't do anything too fancy, but he's basically Batman with a cowboy hat.
Yep. I've always been a big fan of, you know, of just the idea of him, the visual. And I got to tell you, I just popped in my head, I was going to tell you this. I just saw a video that SupermanHomepage.com posted on their YouTube channel. It was the costume contest from the Superman celebration in Metropolis. They had the cosplay contest. And I don't know who the MC was, but he was dressed as Greg Saunders Vigilante. He's got the blue shirt on with the, you know, the flap. He's got a band. He's got his neckerchief pulled down. I think he's got his hat off. But you can, I'm like, me and Cindy Rock, I was like, he's dressed as Vigilante. So you'll have to look, check that video out and see. So you've got a guy cosplaying as him. so I'm sure, and that'd be a really cool costume to cosplay as.
Yeah.
Well, working in my, where I do, you know, I tend to be in costume quite a bit, you know, working, educating his kids at the museum and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's why I developed my persona of Ranger Gord.
Right.
Along with my writing career as well. And my wife did make me a blue cavalry shirt a couple of Christmases ago.
Oh, very nice. Ooh, very nice.
Nice. Put
that thing on, and if I didn't want to embarrass myself.
Nice. Nice. Well, thanks again, Gord. This has been a treat. It's been a real treat.
Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FW Podcast.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club Podcast, David Capoon, and Rocket Dan Johnson, who specifically support JLUcast. You guys get to follow Vixen and Shiera and report back to Green Lantern with what they're dishing about.
There you go.
Next time we begin coverage of the 4-part Cadmus arc finale with Question Authority. This is what it's all been building to, so don't miss it. See you then.
Bye.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
Would you care to surrender now, or shall I have Krager do something unseemly to your friend?
Let her go, and I'm yours. No tricks.
I'm sure. Drop your maze, and we have a deal. Ship!
Darn song thing busted horse thieving alien control panel which can't nobody work proper.